Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spin is a Four-Letter Word. Let's have a beer with the Maroon PR Podcast. We talk about PR and marketing and journalism and all that good stuff. But thanks for listening and watching today. We got a great guest. Jameson Hensley is somebody I consider an old friend in this industry. We've known each other a very long time. Jameson, thank you for being here.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Morning beer, by the way. We're filming this at 10:15, so if you don't see us drinking too much of this, you'll understand. So, Jameson, a little background on Jameson. Most of you NFL fans probably know him and read him, but he's been covering the league since 1999. He's a Maryland guy, went to the University of Maryland, started his journalism career with the Baltimore Sun, covered the then Washington Redskins out of the gate, right? And then been covering the Ravens for quite some time now and been with ESPN since when? When did that
2011.
Start? 2011. Wow.
I've actually covered the Ravens longer now for ESPN than I have for the Sun, which is kind of mind-blowing.
How about that? Yeah. So Jameson's been through it all with the Ravens and covering them. And today we're going to just talk about different things, about covering the NFL, about how this process and this career has shifted over the years with the advent of social media becoming so big, and just dealing with the athletes, and some tips on for you PR people watching and listening to, you know, dealing with journalists, experienced journalists that have seen it all. But Jameson, thanks again for being here. Really just to kind of start it off, tell us a little bit about those early days of coverage. Like when you first got the job with the Sun covering the NFL, what were those days like for you? Was that, I would imagine, a little bit daunting?
It really was. I mean, because my whole life, I always wanted to be in sports. I knew I wasn't going to be playing sports I knew that pretty early on. So I wanted to be part of how can I use sports and be part of my life. And I became a reporter. You know, at the Sun, I started out just being a gopher. I was answering phones for a long, long time. And then after a while, I got a big break of being able to get in and being a reporter. And then a couple years into being a full-time reporter, I was able to start covering the first the Redskins. I was kind of like, okay, let's see how you can do it for an NFL beat before we kind of move you on. And then a year later, I was covering the Ravens. And it was a great time because the Ravens struggled kind of for their first early part of their seasons in Baltimore. I came in 2000. They won a Super Bowl.
Right.
And after they won a Super Bowl, the then owner, Art Modell, who had waited 40 years to win a Super Bowl, he knew this was my first year. He goes, this doesn't happen all the time. Right, I'm like, right. I'm thinking, wow, first year covering a team, they win a Super Bowl, this is going to happen all the time.
It's going to be easy.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you mention that. I always, as a long-suffering New York Jets fan, you know, I know that for a fact. And it's funny, I do say that a lot of people in Baltimore and Ravens fans oftentimes don't know how good they got it. This team's in the playoffs almost every year. They're the model of stability and leadership in the leadership positions. And I think Baltimore is fortunate to have an organization of the caliber of the Baltimore Ravens to root for. It's more of an anomaly than I think some locals might realize.
Yeah, and just, you know, in dealing with even like this year, there was, you know, you see, as you know, when I was starting out covering the Ravens, Matt Stover was pretty much one of the guys that was like older than me. And there was a few more guys. Now it's like once Matt Stover left, it was like, I'm the oldest guy in here, right? This past offseason, I was in an elevator in M&T Bank Stadium. We're going to watch a training camp practice at M&T Bank Stadium. And a reporter who was on his first year covering the Ravens goes, well, how long have you covered the Ravens? And I'm like, well, this is my 24th year covering the Ravens. He goes, that's longer than I've been alive. And that kind of makes you, because I always feel like, I still feel like myself of being the guy covering the 2000 Ravens starting out. But I mean, the business has, I mean, as I've gotten older, the business has just changed dramatically.
Well, it's a good, sorry to interrupt you, Matt. I mean, because that is a good segue. And by the way, because we're going to talk about social media, give Jameson a follow on X or Twitter or whatever you're calling it these days, at Jameson Hensley. He's a great follow, breaks a lot of news, tells great stories. Talk about that a little bit, Jameson, because we do talk about it in the PR space. How dramatically the rise in social media has changed your job, and how challenging it could be a little bit about when it becomes more about breaking news sometimes versus making sure it's 100% right.
Exactly. And I mean, when, again, going back to when I first started out covering the Ravens back in 2000, and my first year as the full-time beat guy was in 2001, and a source told me in 2001, hey, the Ravens are signing this right tackle. He was Leon Searcy was his name, and he, you know, at that point he was like considered one of the top free agents. And I'm like, wow, this is a great get, right? And I'm go, okay, well, you know, I made sure it was correct, and then I had about, I don't know, maybe about 8 or 9 hours to write the story. Wow. Because it was early in the morning. I had to get my story in, and then no one would know about this story until the morning paper came out. So you're talking almost 17, 18 hours later, people aren't getting, and then, you know, and it was always great for me because I was like, I would always kind of wait for when people kind of figure out, like, oh, wow, this is really happening. Now, I mean, you're talking about extreme opposite. I mean, now it's in 18 seconds where if you know something, you better get it out there because if not, someone else is going to find out.
You and see then, Schefter live texting on the set, you know, and like knowing what's going on, ready to break news, like when Rodgers signed with the Jets or got traded. But like, yeah, I mean, so is that a balancing? Like, how has that changed when you're dealing with your editors? And like, you still have to be sure you're right, but there's such a like race to get it out first.
It is. And even last night, the Ravens it kind of came out, oh, the Ravens are signing this pass rusher, Kyle Van Noy, and people are going, oh, the Ravens are going to do a deal. And then a source told me, they're like, well, it's on the practice squad. It's not on a 53-man roster. But everyone was just like, you know, getting the word, oh, he signed with the Ravens. And sometimes, yes, it's the information is correct to a point, but there's also
some context.
Exactly, as well. And I think that's sometimes in our business these days where it's always a rush to be, you want to be the guy that broke the news. You want to be like, you know, according to you, this is it. But sometimes it's not, you have to be, it's not as thorough as, you know, as you would like to be at some point. But yeah, it's a lot of times it's always a race. And I think it's still kind of that journalistic kind of term people always say, hey, you, it's not always to be first, you always want to be right. And so I think sometimes in these days with people in social media, you always want to be the first, but it's also you want to be right, because if you're always the first with things and not always right, then when people see things from you, they're like, well, you know, he wasn't always correct on a lot of these things. Should we trust him here? And that you never want to lose your audience.
Is there a pressure from, because if I were with the your outlet, I would want the story on my platform first versus Twitter.
Yes.
Is there that pressure, or do you? Is there any mandate that says you should break it on our platform first?
No, I'm in a great situation because I have a great group of colleagues around me, from, you know, an Adam Schefter to Jeremy Fowler. Sure. I mean, the news people, Dan Graziano, they are great. Where even when I kind of, and it is very much of a team. Where if I hear something and they're like, well, you know, you didn't hear it from me, but, you know, and then you can still reach out to some people, and then you got a great team of working on things. Sure. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's a pressure at all, but you do definitely want to be right about things.
Sure, absolutely.
And it, believe me, as soon as we get the word and get the news, we love to make sure we, you know, put out our news story, and you can go to ESPN and read everything, especially. It's one thing to have the news and know, okay, this person signed with this team, or this person got released, but we always want to explain, what does this mean? And so that's kind of the next step.
Got it.
Yeah, we're with Jameson Hensley. He is the reporter for ESPN covering the Baltimore Ravens, been doing it a long time, and we really appreciate him being here. Jameson, we recently spoke to another journalist in the sports space, and they said one of the challenges that's rather new is the team's ability to break their own news and tell their own stories, because now they all have production facilities. They obviously have huge social media followings, and they have the ability to do it, where back in the day you'd always rely on the earned media.
Yes.
What kind of challenges has that presented for you?
I mean, it's kind of different, because before you know, teams didn't have their own kind of media group and, you know, their own team reporters and, you know, they're producing their own shows, right. things like that, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I love to watch because it does, like, even for a person that is out there, you do get to learn some things because they do be able to take you back behind the curtain. But it is, it's different just because, you know, they sometimes have, you know, access that you aren't always granted as well. But you always kind of feel like from your perspective as well that, you know, in their coverage, they can only take it up to a certain limit. They, as far, especially the critical level
yeah, sure.
that they can do. So we try to give it, you know, say, hey, you know, from our perspective, yeah, we can create stories and, make sure they're, you know, extremely balanced. I think from the team perspective side, it's not always as balanced. It's, they have to walk a very fine line right. when they're dealing with that.
Right. Have you, you know, you've been with the Ravens now for a while, and they've been a good team for a while, but can you talk about a little bit about the differences between covering a team who's not winning and the team that's winning? Yeah. It's got to be a big difference for you.
It is, and it's always good to be relevant. And that's what I said. when the Ravens bring in Lamar Jackson, when they sign Odell Beckham Jr., I will say that during the days, and I believe me, and the Ravens were successful when they had Joe Flacco, Anquan Boldin, but I wasn't being asked to do SportsCenter when they were around.
When
Lamar Jackson, Odell yeah. Beckham Jr., yeah. it's a lot more of a spotlight mm-hmm. is on your team. I remember when Odell was going to have his first practice with the Ravens, they had me on SportsCenter before the practice, before his practice, and then it was like as soon as like I was done doing something on SportsCenter, I had to stop, go out, cover the practice, and come back and right. then do a SportsCenter hit on yeah. what just happened at yeah. practice.
Right.
And so it's fun in that regard because mm-hmm. you want people to be interested in your work. And luckily, I really haven't had to deal with the other side too
right,
much.
Right.
Because even when they didn't have the marquee players or marquee quarterback, they still had a pretty good defense, and they always were kind of relevant yep. even back then too
yeah,
as well.
Definitely. Yeah. Jameson, one thing I want to mention, too, is that last week, you know, or last couple of weeks, we worked with you to pull together a story about O.J. Bergantz, the advisor to the Ravens. He's been working there and battling ALS for the last 16 years, been running a foundation with his wife, Shanda, for the last 15 years, and just an amazingly inspirational figure that most people around town know. And you wrote a great piece about that. Thank you again for doing that. Talk a little bit about that, because not only did you speak with OJ and Shanda, but you spoke to some of the Ravens and some former teammates as well. Jameson mentioned the 2001 Super Bowl or 2000 Super Bowl. OJ made the first tackle on that. And, you know, he's been an amazing guy doing amazing things. But tell us a little bit about that story because I think you enjoyed writing it.
Oh, yeah. And I remember when OJ made that tackle. I was in Tampa when he made that tackle. And even when he transitioned to really helping kind of the player engagement side too as well, he would go and I would be at training camp where they had it out at Western Maryland College. It's called McDaniel College now. But I would be sitting in the lobby, and OJ was the one person every single day whenever he would walk through the lobby, he would see me, and he would always go, "Ladies and gentlemen, Jameson Hensley," right? And then when I interviewed him just about a month ago, when I walked into that room, he with his eyes, he all of a sudden I hear that voice and it says, "Ladies and gentlemen,"
that's great.
And it just kind of looks like, wow. I mean, OJ is still OJ. And that's what I think it's, you know, everybody that's around him realizes that. It was really my pleasure to do it because OJ has been one of the best person to cover, and all of the time I've been with the Ravens, and you can tell he has an effect on the player because he's out there at practice every single day. And the player who's been around the Ravens now, the longest tenured player is Justin Tucker. It's kind of mind blowing because you don't think Justin right. don't feel like Justin Tucker's been around yeah. that as long, but he's been the longest tenured player. So I asked him, like, you know, what kind of impact has OJ made kind of for you and your career? And he gave this great. Really, this great story about how, yeah, in his second year, he wasn't the NFL's most accurate kicker. And it was the second game, I believe, he missed a couple of kicks, and he was down. And he was thinking legitimately, like, wait a second, is my job going to be in jeopardy here? And he got an email from OJ and said, you know, you will get through this. Keep your head down. Do your work. You will get through this. You know, I believe in you. And he said, yeah, you know, you can get emails from other people and they will say that. But from OJ, with everything that he has gone through and persevered through, it just hit home for him. And he says now, and that, I mean, this is about, and that was 2013. So 10 years later,
amazing.
Tucker still has that email pinned.
Oh, wow.
And so he has that, and he, you know, he has that in his email. So that's how much it had meant to him. And so that's just kind of, that's the impact of OJ.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, you're a Maryland guy.
Yes.
It's, you've got, you went to school at Maryland. It's got to be rewarding and really just cool to be able to cover the hometown team and the hometown market. I mean, talk a little bit about that. And, you know, you could have gone anywhere.
Yeah. It was ESPN early on when they would kind of give you evaluations, especially on air. And one of the comments was authentic Baltimore accent. I don't know. I don't know if that was a positive or a negative. I didn't really see if that was, but I took it as a positive.
Hung on him.
Oh, it was tough with Joe Flacco. When your quarterback is Joe Flacco, it is tough to hide that Baltimore accent. Let me just tell you. Right. But yeah, I mean, I grew up and I was 11 years old when the Colts left. And I, you know, I know the Raiders did, but I mean, in my world, I'm like, how can it, I didn't know a team could leave your city. I'm like, and I was at Parkville Rec playing football, and we were the Parkville Ponies, and we had the horseshoe on our helmets. And so, I mean, I was all in on the Colts, and to see them leave, I was like, I was devastated. And so for years I would watch football, but I wasn't kind of in, you know, and so, but football was always kind of my big, I mean, I love the Orioles, and Maryland basketball, especially, I mean, Len Bias is one of my big first time kind of like sports, like, you know, heroes on the court. It was amazing. But football, I always wanted to be more of, and, when the Ravens, came to town, that's, that was like, I that's the team.
I'm covering that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But still I went to, you know, went to Maryland, University of Maryland, worked at the Diamondback, which is a great student newspaper because it's, they're out Monday through Friday. And then I was like, oh, I can't wait to, you know, because, you know, Maryland football with Boomer, I mean, that was kind of my thing. Sure. So I went there, and my first year covering Maryland football was Mark Duffner's first year, and not really good. Duffin. Not real good, no. After their first loss, because Duffner went to Holy Cross, and I think he lost 13 games in like 15 years. Didn't know, he lost his first game to Virginia, was a bad punt. And you could see him tearing up. And I Mike Preston was covering Maryland football at the time. And I turned to him going, because this is my first game covering college. I go, this happened to him? He goes, no, this does not happen often. No, right, you didn't know that. And then I got to cover Maryland basketball. But, of course, that during that time, it was the year after Walt Williams left, but the year before Joe Smith got there. Ah. So it was, like, the worst possible year that you probably could cover. But still, I enjoyed it. But, yeah, it's amazing to be kind of – to stay in this area and to cover these teams that you grew up watching because there's not many. Of people at W, because I've known so many people that have gone elsewhere and to you know, do it, and I've been extremely lucky to stay in the area.
That's great. Again, Jameson Hensley, ESPN reporter covering the Baltimore Ravens, is joining us on Have a Beer With. Thanks again, Jameson. Shifting gears a little bit to public relations and what we do. So, you know, we always talk a lot about how our industry has evolved like crazy over the last 15 years, right? With social media and content creation and now even like ad buying and that sort of thing. So it used to just be when we opened this company in 2006, we were media relations.
Yes.
Red Button. That's what I grew up in. I grew up under a woman named Phyllis Marriage who taught me how to do this job. And one thing she always harped on me is like, your job is to balance between the athletes and the front office and make sure that the journalists get what they need. And that's how I was trained, and I always made that a priority. I think now you're a little jaded because you happen to work with a top-notch PR outfit with the Ravens, right? It was Kevin Byrne for years leading the charge. Now it's Chad Steele, and you got Patrick and Marisol, and people that just know what they're doing intuitively and are good at it. But there's a lot of PR people that are being trained differently, and they think that their job is – to protect these guys at all costs, to essentially, you know, become a roadblock for the press. And, you know, how, I guess I'll ask you this. One is, do you kind of agree with that assessment based on what you've seen? And two, if you do, like, what's some advice you would give young PR pros at any walk? It doesn't have to just be that are getting into sports, but really in general when you're dealing with the media.
Yeah, I mean, it is tough because, especially with PR people these days, they do have to balance out, okay, especially with these players and social media, now players and athletes feel like that they can, they don't have to have a filter of like going through the media. They can speak their own, and sometimes it doesn't come across as well sometimes. Sure. When they go and the PR is like, they have no idea that the player was going to be able to do that. So that, I think that's when we talk about social media and PR, that's a big challenge these days for them. But as far as dealing with reporters, it's kind of a balancing act, because you want to make sure your team is getting publicizing it, but you also want to make sure it's in a, you know, you're not putting them in, especially the team, in a situation where it's going to be an uncomfortable situation or a story that's going to be slanted a certain way. But I will always go back to, and I just, when I talked to Kevin Byrne just recently, because I'm doing a story on the Ravens and their last time they went to London, which was not a great experience. But I talked to the, you know, Kevin Byrne, the former Ravens PR chief, and he still told me, because when I talk to former players, he always tells me, he's like, you always have to keep relationships. That is the key. And it's, whether you're dealing with reporters or PR, it's all about relationships. Sure. And making sure not only that you trust the athlete, but the athlete trusts you as well. And I think it becomes increasingly more difficult because of social media puts these athletes in such a critical space. I mean, it can be tough for athletes out there. If you fumble, you better not go on social media, because it's going to be a bad place for you. Right. And so I think that's kind of a very delicate balancing act. But again, that's always hit me with Ken Burn. He told me this last week and also over the years. It's just that you have to maintain those relationships. If you do that, that's a good building block off of that. If you don't, then you're going to have problems.
Kevin's a guy I've always had a lot of respect for and had the pleasure of knowing. And I love that he said that, because our tagline is we drive growth through relationships, and we count on that, right? I mean, you can't burn bridge. You have to be there. And that's just being honorable and being honest. And sometimes it doesn't always mean saying yes, but it means being facing the music. And, you know, the one thing I'll say is, you know, when Matt and I were doing the PR thing, there wasn't social media, thank God. And the challenges that PR staffs face at 2 a.m. when somebody decides to tweet something is nothing I envy for sure. I think some
or
of the
an athlete is out and someone takes a picture or something like that. I mean, now, you know, it used to be athletes could go out and there'll be some people there and you might have to sign autographs or whatever, but now everybody has a phone. Everybody's a paparazzi, that can be a very stressful thing for not only athletes but public relations as well.
Well, it's funny, James, you mentioned that. You know, I've worked with Cal Ripken for a long, long time, and Cal says, you know, when he was a young guy, rookie of the year, and all that, just he's out having fun. There weren't phone cameras, there weren't that, there weren't anybody tweeting it, and good thing, right? Like sometimes you wouldn't do anything wrong, but he was having a good time being a young person and enjoying himself. And you know, if today that would become a thing where you're apologizing, it's silliness, right? And so it's a hard thing. I do want to get your perspective about guiding athletes, and I'd love to know who your favorites are over the years too, to cover, like who have you really enjoyed covering. But I always harken back to a story, and Matt, I'm sure you have one or 10, of when an athlete didn't want to speak to the media, but you knew it was in his best interest to do it.
Yes.
And I had a specific story with Mike Messina, and I talked him into doing it, and I promised him that I would, you know, get him in, get him out pretty quickly, but it was in his best interest to do it, and it worked out well, and he trusted me, and that just built our relationship, going back to that. But, you know, does that still come up fairly regularly where you're like, hey, like we need this guy to say something because it's a delicate situation, whether it's a benching or an injury or whatnot.
Right. Yeah. My first instance, and again, going back to my early days, because that was when I was just, you know, trying to figure out things as a reporter. But in 2000, the Ravens Super Bowl season, their last game they lost, it was at home against Pittsburgh. It was during the touchdown drought. But the Ravens had this one defensive tackle, Sam Adams, who was about
Sam Adams
is 6'5". He listed at 360. I'm thinking getting closer to the 400. But anyway, much bigger guy than me. And in that game, he got called twice for offsides. And Sam had a great, even though he was so big, he had a great anticipation. And sometimes it looked like he was offside, but it looked like he almost sometimes timed the snap so well that the officials didn't get it right. So I went up to him and I wanted to say, hey, kind of explain the false start. Sam was in no mood to talk and said some expletives at me. And I'm like, oh my. And so I was like, no, I'll ask him again, because I think it would be best if you explain yourself rather than just curse at me. And he again just ripped into me, right? Uh-huh. And I'm going, oh my God, please. I'm like, am I sweating? I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, I could literally get killed here. And said, okay, whatever. So I actually did put in his comments and put in like, you know, expletive. He didn't talk to me the rest of the year. And it was held that against me. But the following year, came up to me and just like, hey, he's like, I'm sorry, you know, like I do it. And I still talk to Sam 23 years, 24 years
wow,
later.
That's great.
I can call Sam when Tony Siragusa passed away, last year. Called Sam Adams on the phone, talked to me for 20 minutes, gave me great stories about Goose and everything. So, again, sometimes it might not work out so well, but over time, if they realize, okay, you're just trying to do your job, they didn't handle the situation too well, but it, you know, let's put it aside, and you can still have a great relationship over the years. There's other times where, you know, athletes do not want to talk, and, you know, again, PR has to say, hey, I think it's best that you address this and not just hide. It can be a very, but I think athletes, once they get through that, they realize, okay, it's better to get through it and then just try to avoid it.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, you know, what I think we've probably both had these experiences where we've had to work with a player to encourage them to go out there and face the music a little bit. But one thing that really helps is if there's a veteran player who is there every time. You went through it with Cal, and when Michael Jordan was at the Wizards, the same thing. Michael Jordan, good game or bad game, was out every game. It was Michael Jordan, and he still showed up in the locker room after every game. And it's easy then at that point to point to the young guys and say, see, you know, even he had a bad game and he stood up. And Cal did the same thing, I'm sure, every time.
Yeah. No, for sure. That's a good segue, Jameson. A couple more and we'll let you go. Jameson Hensley, he is the Ravens reporter for ESPN, who at Jameson Hensley. He's a great follow. Over the years, who are two or three of your favorite guys that you've covered and just really enjoyed him for whatever reason?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Tucker is when I talk about like my Mount Rushmore of guys that I've covered, Justin Tucker, because one, he's willing to talk after he makes a game winner, or the few times he doesn't, he's out there in front and he'll, you know, try to explain things and not make excuses, things like that. Todd Heap, Peter Boulware, guys that who you would talk to and not only just try to, you know, explain things and give you the answer, but I love the guys that would be able to relay stories to you as well, and explain and go, hey, you know, this is why this happened, and kind of just give you, because sometimes I think athletes, especially these days, they feel like the journalists are, and the media is trying to, you know, gotcha type things. Right. And so they sometimes have a little bit of a wall. But they realize that, well, we're just also trying to allow the fans to come to a place where, you know, we're allowed to, but they're not, and give them stories. And that's what fans really love. Yeah. It's just like, you know, what exactly did that happen? Why, you know, why did that happen? And again, like, you know, I will say, you know, Brian Billick as a coach as well was, he was a guy
was
that
a PR guy
when to coach. And so he got it. Yeah. I mean, he got it so well, and I am so thankful that as a first time that he was my the head coach that I got to cover, because he gave me so much access and things like that that you wouldn't believe. And he also would just fill up your notebook and things like that. So those are the players that I always kind of list like, okay, give me something. Just you don't have to write the story for me, but give me a story that I could kind of really grip onto.
You try to tell the athletes too that it and look, in our case, the CEOs or the executive, it always pays off to stand up, answer the questions. No comment. It's more of a comment than you think it is, or just grumbling at somebody and walking away. And, you know, hopefully they always listen. Grow. I hate to bring everything back to the New York Jets, but, you know, this last weekend was really interesting because caught on camera, one of the running backs, Michael Carter, was expressing frustration to the running backs coach, and it got a little heated and they showed it. And this is a guy that stood up like a champ after the game with all the press and really earned a lot of points with all the beat guys. And he stood there and explained himself and basically said, I'm 24 now. I got to grow up. I got to handle these better, but know that coach and I have all the love in the world. We got into it because we're both competitors, but he took the time to really explain it and then own it, you know, basically in PR, own your shit, face the music. And, you know, generally that's always going to work out for you.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to really earn a lot of respect by doing that as well, because it's easy to go up after you score three touchdowns and go, hey, how you doing, guys? Let me have when things don't go the right way, I think that's when you kind of show, okay, what kind of character does a lot of these players have?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Well, last thing before we wrap up, let Jameson get on with his day and go cover the Ravens. You know, last night we're recording the morning after Brooks Robinson passed away, and Brooks was a legend, to say the least, in Baltimore, 23 years with the Orioles. But, you know, for us who've maybe had some encounters with him over the years, I'm sure you have, Jameson. I mean, what a gentleman, what a great guy, and so sorely missed. And, you know, it shook everybody. We all knew Brooks was, 86 years old, and it's not shocking, but it's equally sad. And just cheers to Brooks. We lost an icon, but, God rest his soul. And, thank you, Jameson. Thanks for taking on some time today. I mean, it was a real pleasure having you on. Thanks for some insights into journalism and the evolution and dealing with dopey PR guys like us, man. We really appreciate it.
No, this is a lot of fun. I really, really appreciate it, too.
Really appreciate it. Guys, thanks again for listening and watching. Spin is a four-letter word. Have a beer with. We will see you next time. Thanks for listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe. Send us your feedback, too. We want this to be interesting for everybody. And give us a follow, @MaroonPR on Twitter and LinkedIn.